This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices, united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
Yo, what's up, everybody? It is, well, you know what time it is. It's Monday. It's time for the Monday Overreaction Podcast. I'm Jeff Ketchum, joined, as always, by Anwar Richardson. It is now a staple of our daily lives, our weekly lives, and on Mondays, we do the Overreaction Podcast. And Anwar, there's no Tom Herman press conference today, which normally would, well, should we talk about the NFL? What should we overreact to today? There's this little thing happening in the Texas football universe where last night, word trickles out that Urban Meyer has told Texas no, that he is not returning to coaching to coach them. And maybe, who knows, for health reasons, stays out of coaching altogether for the rest of forevermore. And now the Texas football program is in a position where, and this also was, you know, I think you did a good job of trying to slowly trickle the word out that if Urban's a no, Herman being out isn't an automatic, so much so that we sit here today and it seems, unless the Texas administration does an about face, unless the anger comes in at such a level that they feel the pressure and they make a move, Tom Herman looks like he could be back next year for potentially the weirdest lame duck coaching season of all time. We've got a lot to overreact to.
I don't know where we start with this, because there's so much to unpack as relates to this subject. But yeah, it basically, how it looks like and how it appears is that Texas was for many months believing that they will get rid of Tom Herman for Urban Meyer for whatever the reasons were, and to the point that they were kind of willing to alienate the coach, and to the point where it affects recruiting, you know, it affects the conversations that are being held. It affects the team. Like Tom Herman talked about guys coming to him in practice and showing him their cell phones and all these type of things for them to not get him and the guy that they wanted, and kind of feel like, oh, well, yeah, I guess we'll just stay with Tom. And now to your point, Ketch, now it's a little weird. It's been like telling your wife, like, hey, I'm probably going to leave you for another woman. And like, I've been dating another woman and we've been talking. And then that thing with the other woman doesn't work out. And then you go back to the wife and like, hey, I want to see if we can like go to counseling and figure this thing out.
No, all of the relationship metaphors are true and they're all horrible. They're all horrible. Right. Like I mentioned it the other day. It's like finding out that someone's cheated on you. And then just because we were like, what do you do? Right. Like, oh, my God. Because the idea is that Texas now is in a position where they can't make change because they are overcome with fear of making a mistake. That, you know, I think you and I both agree that if James Franklin and Mario Cristobal, if either one of them were sitting at 4-0 or 5-0 or 4-1 or 5, if either of those two guys was sporting a record that has their teams borderline top 10, it's probably on. That yes. Chris Del Conte, through all of his years of being in the industry, has a relationship with those guys that if they were flying, if Oregon was having a season that it had last year, this year, well, it's on. It's on like Donkey Kong. But it seems like Texas has a real lack of imagination over, and look, I'm not saying it's easy, right? Like, people, you asked me on Saturday, Ketch, you say change has to be made, give me the hire. And I don't have a great answer. But my point then in my 10 thoughts from the weekend was that I don't get paid $1.7 million a year to have the answer. I don't. Like, I don't get a chance to talk to agents. I don't get a chance. I don't know how interested Dan Mullen would be. I don't know who in the NFL might be interested in a coaching job and whether that would move the needle. I don't necessarily know like who the next Lincoln Riley is, right? But that's not my job. It's Chris Del Conte's job to know all of that. And that I think one of the big things for me that we have to talk about today, for me, the huge elephant in the room isn't that Texas is bringing back potentially Tom Herman. It's that they bungled the last 8 weeks on a multitude of levels behind the scenes that I have just thought too much has happened. And it I still think that might be the case, that when this thing's all said and done, it's just not viable to for them to leave Tom Herman hanging out to dry for 8 weeks, for them to have pinned the eyes of Texas disaster on him. For Chris Del Conte, in my estimation, I can't prove this, but to me, it was not an accident that one of Chris Del Conte's favorite reporters got access in the blink of an eye to statements from three head coaches at Texas that all went out of their way to throw Tom Herman under the bus for their AD. That he hasn't said a word since July about the eyes of Texas, about the football program, about any game that's occurred this season. He hasn't given them attaboys. He hasn't said, be safe on the trip home. He has completely distanced himself from the Texas football program in such an apparent and obvious and dangerous way that they are now coming back and saying, no, it's good. We were always potentially going to keep Tom around. If that's the case, protect your coach. We kind of have joked all season long about the dreaded vote of confidence. He still doesn't have one publicly. Like, behind the scenes, you get the sense that the Texas AD's office is very comfortable trying to reach out to reporters and say, hey, FYI, Tom leaving is not a done deal. But they didn't make that effort to support him at any point during the season. Now that it's over, now that recruiting is in the abyss, now that the fans are bloodthirsty for change because they've been programmed to think, well, the eyes of Texas thing was all Tom Herman's fault. Nobody else's. Wasn't because Chris Del Conte from August through September didn't give a consistent message for anybody to follow. Not because he hasn't come out and addressed the situation. Like, Tom Herman, look, I think Tom Herman has failed in his 4 years at the University of Texas as head football coach. It has not come together. The things that he was hired to do have not occurred. But if you're going to keep him, you have to protect him. Tom Herman, you're the head football coach on Worth, University of Texas, is the most valuable asset on campus. And when it fails, it's a disaster for Texas. Like, there's no more valuable person, for better or worse, than the head football coach. He is the CEO of the thing that is your billion-dollar revenue generator, right? When they generate 200-plus million over the course of each year, and you start thinking about, well, over a 10-year window, that's a couple of $1 billion. He's the guy. And now they've handled this in such a way that Texas fans are like, it can't happen. It can't. Because you guys program the fans into thinking that if this is all Tom's fault, he's a failure, we're going after Urban Meyer, that everybody's now in a position where they're trying to walk back. Not the words. There haven't been any words. The actions of the last, let's just say 8 weeks. Let's go back to early October. I just cannot wrap my head around it. I don't think I will overreact to anything like I will overreact to what's happening today. It is one of the single biggest calamities I have ever seen in 26 years of covering Texas football. This is getting caught with your pants down in embarrassing fashion. And I think this, for all of the fundraising, I think Chris Del Conte today is known amongst his constituency as a laughingstock.
Oof, I got to follow that. I mean, this is where there's so many problems to that. But the point that you make is a valid one. It was almost implied and heavily implied that after OU, after Sam Ehlinger standing out there for the eyes of Texas, even though he wasn't alone, but the symbolism associated with that moment, it made it seem like, hey, Tom Herman's a dead man walking. Like, it's over. And that was kind of what was being put out there. Because here's, at any point, you know, Del Conte can get in front of the media, get in, you know, or go to the guys that he talks to the most, right? And say, look, you know, listen, you know, there's some things that are going on here with UT, with the size of Texas. And look, you know, not the newsletter, okay? I'm talking about a microphone, right? When's the last time a newsletter has been on SportsCenter, right? How many times have you ever seen someone quote a newsletter? Or, you know what I'm saying? You tell me the last time a newsletter is going across the ticker. Okay, let's put the newsletter aside. Like what goes across the ticker, what goes across SportsCenter is when you have a microphone in front of you. And when you have a microphone in front of you or a convictional tweet, that's when people really, really pay attention. They didn't do that. Instead, what they chose to do is give the appearance that, hey, Tom Herman fucked up the eyes of Texas. This is all on him. And you know what? We're going to get rid of this dude. We're going to get Urban. And so that's what Texas fans started getting. All right, cool. This is what's going to happen. This is what's going to be. Like, it was done deal, signed, you know, going to be a signed, sealed, delivered kind of deal. And Tom Herman's supposed to be out, right? To the point where recruits are asking Tom about it. You know, it's a bad situation for the guy. Like the guy knows that I'm probably done. I'm asking him the questions about his job security and Urban Meyer in press conferences because the outside noise is so great to the point that he's heard it. So great to the point that the guy who also has to get prepared for games is also hearing like he's done. And now all of a sudden what happens is you don't get him. There's no plan B. And everyone's like, well, I mean, Tom's still under contract. And so it's one of those that if there was a chance that Tom, and this is where I think the mismanagement happens. If there was still a chance that Tom was going to come back, if you don't get Urban, right? If it was Urban was plan A and Tom was plan B, then you've got to do some massaging and you got to hide him. You got to protect him a little bit, right? You've got to make it seem like things are okay. You're working together. You guys are good. Like, it was a misunderstanding. But guess what? Since OU, the guys are out there. Sorry this thing happened. The fact they didn't do that, and then it made it seem like the dude's gone, and now Texas fans wake up, or before they went to bed, they realize that Tom is still the guy. Now look, Ketch, something could potentially happen in end of December or beginning of January, but we know as we record this, as of December 7th, in real time, they don't have another answer. That's it. Period. Point. As it's December 7th, January 7th may come, and they can all act like maybe they could do the A team, right? I love it when a plan comes together, but we'll know. No, you did not have a plan. As of today, you didn't have a plan. Your only plan is hope your kids don't have the coronavirus, so you go play Kansas and finish with 7 wins.
Look, it's embarrassing to say that you don't have a plan. They're saying they don't have a plan. People you talk to, the people I talk to, it's a one gigantic Elmo shoulder shrug. That's what it is. And, you know, I was talking to sources last night and they said things like Chris Del Conte is scrambling and, you know, the shit's hitting the fan. But I mean, they, behind the scenes, there's been a conscientious effort to fall on the sword and say, we don't have a plan, which is ironic because they might not have even needed this plan if he'd fallen on the sword 2 months ago. Like, I never understood the Eyes of Texas thing. We're the boss. The boss. I mean, the buck stops with Chris Del Conte. I never understood why he didn't just come out and protect Herman in the beginning and say, look, this is complicated. We've dropped the ball. I've dropped the ball. We are going to work extremely hard to get this right. And at the end of the day, getting it right is the most important thing. And look, I personally, you know, in retrospect, I should have done some things differently. I misread the room, but this is tough. This is tough. This is a difficult conversation, but we're working on it. And I'm with Tom, and Tom supported the players, and we're about supporting the players. I mean, that's what, in retrospect, it needed to, not even in retrospect, that's what needed to happen then. But now, look, to me, the only real recruit that they've lost, not Billy Bowman, who that was as much about his girlfriend going to Oklahoma as anything else, although obviously the circumstances with Texas hasn't completely helped, although his teammate Jatavion Sanders hasn't peeled off. He looks like he's set to sign with Texas. So it feels like Billy Bowman's and most of the rest of the recruiting class seems pretty solid. It boggles my mind, because to me, they lost Quinn Ewers because of the lack of settled stuff in the program. That the slow start coupled with, I mean, they're Texas fans, so they're on message boards. They're reading it. They see the chaos. They see an athletic director who's not supporting his coach that appeared to be having a very public feud. By the way, kudos to Tom Herman. In the end, Tom did for his boss what his boss didn't do for him. For the last month, Tom Herman's been showing up at press conferences, and he's been giving the company line. Hey, I know I have conversations with Chris Del Conte, and he supports us, and he supports me, and he's the best boss in the country. And he'll talk to recruits if I ask him to. Like, Tom didn't mean it. There's no way Tom Herman can feel good about what Chris Del Conte has done for the last 2 months. But publicly, Tom put up a good face. And you know what? Whether or not Tom Herman wants to still be here or not, he's here. And the only reason he's here is because he gave Chris Del Conte public grace when Chris Del Conte couldn't do the same for him. And today, I don't think the anger is with Tom Herman anymore. It's really not. Today, for months, Tom Herman's been the target of all of the anger. He ain't today. He's not. It has and I just, the whole time I've been thinking, how in the hell is Chris Del Conte going to bring back Tom Herman after what he's done to Herman the last couple of months? And people could be like, well, what's he done? He hasn't done anything. That's the problem. He hasn't supported his coach. He hasn't made public statements. He has, since July, ghosted the media, his constituency, outside of occasional Zoom calls where he doesn't provide answers. I thought there's no turning back. And I still believe there's no turning back. But they don't. They appear to believe that there's a window where they can do this. I don't know how Tom Herman's supposed to succeed. I don't know how. Short of him getting a second extension from Del Conte. Even if it was just a year, well, we're throwing a year onto your contract. The buyout doesn't increase, but here's an artificial show of commitment to you, which even if it was just artificial, people would be on tilt. Wait a minute. You gave him, we're in this because you gave him a 2-year extension in the first place. Now you're going to get, even if it's a fake extension, the optics would be terrible. I cannot believe how poorly this has been mismanaged behind the scenes. Here's the other thing. If it was Urban or bust, how about this not be public? Texas has been, look, it ain't just us. Every media outlet in the world has been reporting that Texas is been pursuing Urban Meyer. In fact, you know, I would suggest that the mouthpiece media organizations within the Texas media market that are most beholden to the athletic department, they were the ones that were just like us. They were just as vocal in reporting on this. They have egg on their face. There's no shame in swinging for the fences and having Urban Meyer tell you no. And that's probably, look, I don't know. I don't even know who, like, I'm married, so it doesn't matter anymore. But, like, if once upon a time I'd run into, like, a supermodel, I mean, there's no shame in asking for a number and being told no or not getting a date. Like, that's unlikely, right? I mean, you know, but you know, sometimes you do it, and if it doesn't happen, well, then you don't ever have to put your head on a pillow and play the what if. You say, oh, man, remember that time I ran into Halle Berry? And she was looking so fine, and she was recently divorced from David Justice, and, like, I took my shot, and she said no. But for the rest of your life, you don't have to wonder, like, what if I'd asked Halle Berry, like, to go? You know what I mean? Like, to me, there's no shame in missing out on Urban Meyer. To make the attempt is big-time, big-boy college football. But you have to be smart about it. You have to be smart about this. And to me, Texas has not been, this Urban Meyer thing has been lingering for months. The Iowa State game happened, and everybody from Texas projected that's what we've been waiting for. So much so that after the Iowa State loss, they immediately began a hardcore pursuit of Urban Meyer. Hardcore. So much so that Urban was on the set this weekend on Fox blushing every time. He was blushing like a long-tailed cat in a room full of rocking chairs every time one of his cohorts just made a vague reference to it. And that happens while they've still got Tom Herman employed. Tom Herman's been asked about, you asked him about Urban Meyer on the record. And he's like, oh, well, you know, that's noise and I don't listen to it and want to know. And how can I tell my kids that they got to stay focused if I can't stay focused? Like, he's been asked about it because it is as plain as day. And that they've now put themselves into a corner where they're trying to walk it all back as if it never happened. It's mystifying. And I understand Texas fans today who are like, I can't do it anymore. Because I'm kind of like that with the Dallas Cowboys to a certain extent. Like, there gets to be a point where you can't ever trust Jerry again. And this moment in time is, for me, for a lot of Texas fans, it's the last chance for Texas to kind of get this right. It's been a long decade. This clown car thing has to stop. I mean, people that are writing six-figure, seven-figure checks to cover the South End Zone project, like, they're given that money because they believe deep down that it will help turn Texas back into the Texas that they envision. And today, the people that will be listening to this podcast are going to be questioning themselves. They're going to be questioning, why do I do this? Why do I put my commitment into this program when this program doesn't know its ass from its elbow? And that's fair. Like, I, as the owner of orangebloods.com, am nervous about the impact that this has on our business because, you know, like, you are going to have a hard time exciting Texas fans about the next year. One of the reasons why you make the change with Tom Herman this year is because next year is a rebuilding job to a certain extent. You are starting a new quarterback truly for the first time in three seasons. I mean, I know Sam's a bit of a four-year starter, but that first year was kind of an off-and-on deal with Bouchel. He's been basically the full-time guy for the last 3 years. And you bring him back, and the team on paper doesn't look anywhere near as good. I mean, Ellinger, Cosme, Kerstetter, Osai, Ingram, Stearns. I mean, there's a role. That's a half dozen really important players, if nothing else, on paper for this team. Mm-hmm. And they got to replace all of that. A new coach would have to replace all of that. And you could look at next year with excitement if it's a rebuild of year one with a new coach. But a rebuild in year five with a coach that the fans have now been programmed to hate. How the hell do we put out an offer in February for new signups? Be like, 2021 Texas football, catch the excitement.
That's tomato.
catch the excitement. One for the thumb. Like, I don't know. I don't know what they come up with, but Texas fans are, and again,
what's going to be the recruiting one for 2022?
Well, here's the thing. Like, if they don't do anything else, but they just bring him back because he still has years on his contract, the whole storyline for the next 365 days is he's coaching for his job. And that kind of climate, it's why I know people hear me say extension and they cringe. And I cringe too when the words come out of my mouth. Like, you guys can't see me right now. I just cringed. But you can't go into next season. You can't for the next 12 months. And really, I guess we're talking about the next 9 months-ish until the start of the next college football season. You can't have the daily conversation around the program being, well, if he didn't win it this year, what would he have to do to keep his job next year in a rebuilding year? Because I could make a case that 9-3 might be the ceiling next year. It might be. Assuming they play 12 games. I mean, you know, if Casey Thompson's the starter, they got to go through some growing pains. If Hudson Card ends up being the starter, he's never taken a down of major college football. And while Sam turned into a top six, top seven all-time quarterback in the history of the program and has all the stats that would suggest statistically he should be even higher on that list, he had to go through growing pains. Colt McCoy went through growing pains. Vince Young went through growing pains. So it's as good as I think Hudson Card will eventually be, next year he's got to play in his first game. Then he's got to go on the road and play his first road game. Then he's got to go on the road in conference game, his first conference game, his first OU game. Remember we did the firsts with all of Sam's firsts. You and I covered them. Yeah. There are so many firsts. Well, now they're getting ready to go through a new season with a new quarterback, and all the firsts got to happen all over again. And that's going to happen in a year where Herman, again, let me ask you, what in the hell does Tom Herman next year have to do to save his job?
Well, I mean, there's a couple of things. It's because first and foremost, they've got to get – there's a couple of things because you're talking record-wise and team-wise, right? So from a team perspective
– And recruiting-wise.
And recruiting. Well, first and foremost, Hudson Card has got to have an offensive line, right? And this is – you know, this is the thing that if Alex was on here – I mean, you want to get him on full tilt right there. Do make sure you do it on a podcast later this week, right? Because one of the things I've talked about, but Alex is definitely, because Alex loves offensive line. I was talking about that, is that catch that offensive line next year, that's going to be shaky. I mean, if you thought the O-line was shaky at times this year, and look, yeah, they had a good game against K-State, okay? But that we talk about an overall thing, and that the offensive line without Sam Cosmi, right? Without Okafor, no matter what you think of them as players, no matter what you think of Kerstetter, you know, and maybe that's the point, you try to convince Okafor and Kerstetter to come back, right? You have an offensive line that it could be really, really sketch. So you've got to somehow repair that. And like to your point, like, and then have Hudson Card ready to go.
Running for his life.
Yeah, essentially. I mean, that's what it looks like. And then you've got to say to yourself, okay, well, if you got to have someone running for their life, are you going to have Hudson run for his life or JaQuindon run for his life, right? I mean, who might be able to run for his life and potentially get you a first down? Or who's going to just run for his life, right? There's going to be some serious decisions that have to be made. I think we all assume that Hudson will be the guy. So you have that from a team standpoint, you know, Tom has almost got to get his coaches, you know, on whatever they were unable to accomplish last spring and whatever they felt like that hindered them in some areas. I mean, he's got to get these guys to say, look, man, we're freaking in do or die mode. Like, do your kids like Austin or not? I know it's a pandemic, right? But do your kids like Austin or not? You were probably able to go on the lake. Like, do you like this living? Because guys, if we don't pull it together this year, we're all gone. Every single one of us. So, you know, he's got to know that. And then, so those guys have to coach their ass off. As good as a job that Chris Ash may have done for the past few games. And then it kind of got like a little touch and go against K-State at times, but you know, Deuce Vaughn is pretty good. So you got to give Deuce a little bit of credit there. He's still got to find a way. The one thing I've written consistently is that Tom Herman is clearly an upgrade over Charlie Strong, but Tom Herman wasn't hired to make guys feel good about losing. And yes, he'll come at the end of the year, Ketch. We're going to hear a lot about 2-point loss against TCU, 8-point loss versus Oklahoma, you know, one possession loss against Iowa State. We're just so close. Well, in his history, how many games has he ever been blown out of once he's been in Texas? Has it just about every loss been close with the exception of maybe like one, maybe two? And then even then, I don't think it's anything more than 17 points. And again, I have to go back and look. So he's got to find a way that some of these things that, you know, the going for it on fourth downs, field goals, all these little things that he's trying to figure out on the fly, he's going to have to figure it out. And then at that point, Ketch, when we're talking about a full season, I mean, are we saying he's got – I felt like we said he needed to get to the Big 12 championship game this year.
That's what I'm saying.
And then it wasn't. And, you know, I think this goes back to something, Ketch, that does not get a lot – doesn't get talked about a lot and doesn't get talked about enough. You know, and, you know, back in – October, you and I annoyed and maybe pissed off some people who supported Del Conte.
Definitely.
Because we wrote a columns on the same day that took issue with him. And there was we got some pushback behind the scenes from some folks that just were not happy with us and one of the things I know that I pointed out. It is funny because as people got pissed off at me, one of the things I pointed out as they thought, oh, well, you're just, you know, trying to do stuff, you know, made me write something positive for Herman. All right. And I said, but, you know, one of the things I pointed out that I said, one of Chris Del Conte's biggest mistakes was he gave Tom an extension. Like, and I was like, that to me was the thing that we don't talk about enough, but I put that high up in my story. The fact that they gave him an extension to 2023 after the Sugar Bowl season. What does this conversation look like, Ketch, if he only had one more year left on his contract? If he only had, he's only owed $6 million in 2021. Any quote unquote lateral move that you felt like you'd be making is easily justifiable. Am I wrong at that point? If you say, hey, you're a crystal ball. Well, yeah. Okay. Well, you only owe Tom, like, you know, at that point, what a $5 million would be. It's like a $5 million on each buyout. So you owe him $5 million and you're done. But that extension makes it to go back to your question. What needs to happen? Well, at that point, there's still another $10 million on the books. I don't know, because at this point they put themselves in if it's not Urban, because there's so much money that's left, it's like you gotta keep him around. And then you get to a lesser point where it's like, okay, well, now it's not as much money. Then you can make a decision. But right now, everything seems lateral. They're like, we can't spend the money on that. Now we don't know. So to your point, then to answer your question in a long way, I don't know. I guess as long as he's in that, you know, 8-9-ish range, 10. I mean, Texas fans are so pissed by at this point. But I mean, I guess if he's around 9 or 10, then at that point, it's like, all right, well, that's good enough for us not to spend all that money.
Let me ask you another question. And I'm afraid of the answer to this one. Any chance, on a scale of 1 to 10, the Texas athletic department is actually being incredibly Machiavellian right now. And they really intend to blow Herman out after January when the season's over, but they don't want to blow up any chances with anybody that they would pursue by having the spotlight on, I mean, like it's been on Urban Meyer, right? Like, you know, if Mario Cristobal was 4-1 right now, or 5-0 or whatever, and Texas fires Herman today, and suddenly everybody knows that Cristobal and Chris Del Conte have a good relationship, and he's a great recruiter, and he had a big year a year ago, and so he looks like a guy. Well, if they were undefeated, you know, that you'd be messing with their season. Like, that's one of the real problems that Texas has right now. And if they wanted to go now after somebody, I don't know, let's say Brian Kelly, I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think you think that's going to happen. So because we both think it won't happen, let's use him as an example. I mean, you go after Brian Kelly right now, he's kind of in the middle of an important season. And the one thing he can't deal with is distractions. So on a scale of 1 to 10, in your mind, how feasible is it that all of this is a giant ruse, that Chris Del Conte and the Texas administration aren't really, you know, a clown car? They're really a sophisticated thinking machine. And what they've now done is lay the path for cover while they go out and about their business for the next couple of weeks. And nobody's able to, you know, take the air out of the balloon because officially they're supporting Tom Herman. 1 to 10 scale. How possible is that?
2.
That's what I'm saying.
2. Like, because the cards have been revealed. That's why I said whatever happens in January, even if Tom is gone, that's why I say in real time, as we record this on December 7th, that's not the case. Now, they'll try to tell us that potentially in January. That Urban thing wasn't whatever, but we got our guy. Like, this is our guy. This is the guy we wanted all along. Look at his accolades. Beautiful family. Was talking to his kids in the hallway. Just a great kids. Gave him some candy. I mean, they love peanut M&Ms. Like, whatever the case, you're gonna hear all these stories and all this great stuff. That if that happens, right? But in today, that ain't it. That ain't it. That's not it. Now, I'm not saying they don't have people in their head that they're thinking about, of course, but we know what it really was about. It was about trying to get Urban. And again, no problem. If you got a chance to get a Hall of Famer, by no any stretch of the imagination. Like, look, if you had a chance to get Adam Schefter to come here to Orange Bloods and replace me, there's a part of me that's going to be a little salty, but I just sound like, well, damn, it is Adam Schefter, right? Like, I get it. Oh, Woj, right?
Woj wants to dabble in college football.
Yeah. He's like, I like that Greg Brown guy too. Like, I think he might be kind of cool to cover, right? At that point, you're like, I get it.
Sorry, Dustin, but Woj wanted to take over the Texas basketball beat.
Get it? We get it, but then. Then if you decide, like, all right, you can't. But then in January when Woj turns you down and then you hire someone else, you can't be like, nah, this is my guy all along. Woj is okay. I mean, are we going to say that about Urban? Like, he's just okay. Like, come on. So we know what you wanted. Now, you'll talk yourself into it. But I don't believe this was a part of some master plan. That okay, this is what we're going to do, guys. Let's totally alienate Tom Herman, make him seem to be the bad person that everybody hates. The fan base apps, I mean, they're already kind of lukewarm to disliking him anyway. Let's make sure they hate him and can't stand him, okay? And then we're going to go pursue a Hall of Fame coach, and then. Listen, as people are looking at that Hall of Fame coach, we're going to make it look like we struck out on him. And then 4 weeks later, we're going to hire the guy that we really, really want. Like, tell me what A team plan that is. Because even if Ocean's 11, if we're talking about Ocean's 11 plan, there's never been one that was that had that many quote unquote hiccups to get to the final destination.
I am at a point where I'm literally out of words on war. Like, I could scream and I could overreact, and I've got all kinds of things in my head, but this has now become a bit of an impossible situation, because no matter what, and look, once upon a time, I think Pete Carroll was like the fourth choice at USC. So, you know, I'm very careful. It's a little bit like talking about 5'10" that every 5'10" linebacker could be Zach Thomas. He did it. Like, you know, there are statistical improbabilities that we all have to somewhat acknowledge exist, that it's not impossible. But this is a program that no matter whether they keep Herman or don't, that cloud of what could have been, because it followed Charlie. Charlie was not Nick Saban. And it made Charlie's failures more extreme. It wasn't just that he lost a bunch of games. It's that from the moment he walked through the door, dudes like Red McCombs were like, this dude should be at best a coordinator on Nick Saban's staff. And then proved to be right. And then it was like, well, whatever coded messaging was in that, in the end, he was right. Charlie didn't work out. And it's been 7 years and people still talk about that. I feel like in 7 years from now, if Texas isn't careful, they're going to be pointing back to Urban Meyer and still talking about what could have been. And I don't think Herman can escape. This is why the pursuit of Urban, they needed to know in September. They need to know in October that the last week occurred the way that it did. And that, man, there was never a denial. Not a single denial of anything. I mean, you didn't even have the athletic department reaching out to the Brian Davises of the world saying, nope, not going to happen. And then Davis gets a quote and says, not as of this weekend, Brian Davis was saying, well, it's not absolute that Tom Herman is gone, but Urban is 50-50. I mean, what? So, and I don't blame Brian. I'm not taking a shot at Brian Davis, right? Because ultimately he's reporting back this ridiculous amount of mixed messages that are coming out. I mean, we are too today, right? We are, because it's what's happening. It's a clusterfuck. And there's no way to put a shine on this. There's no way to take what's happened and, well, this is a good thing. It's not. It's the opposite of a good thing. There is no way. I feel very much like Sheriff Buford T. Justice right now. There's no way you come from my loins. I feel that like that's what this is. This is inexplicable that it's happened. And now you look back at all of the missteps. I mean, I'm talking about the last week where, you know, I think Texas kind of got off on having their names mentioned with Urban Meyer. I think Texas got off on having its fans watch the pregame show on Saturday and look for clues. I think they thought, you know what I think? I think they thought, there's no way Urban Meyer turns us down. No way. We're going to offer him more money than God. And I think they thought that medical stuff was overblown. Oh, He ain't really not coaching because of the headache things. But then he started looking at like Shelly Meyer, that interview that she did back in early October. Mm-hmm. Texas wasn't really on the radar at that point. There were a little bit because the interviewer did make did reference Texas. But she was like, look, man, he hadn't had a headache since the Rose Bowl. I'm like, that's real. Like when she said that, I was like, oh, not a single one. Well, he hasn't had to use sleep aids since he stopped coaching. I was like, oh, that seems significant. Cause on war, I have trouble sleeping sometimes. So I can relate to that, right? Like there are nights when I can't sleep and I feel sometimes like I'm a borderline insomniac. And you know, the idea that he stopped coaching and suddenly he sleeps like a baby every night. He don't need money. He's got money. I mean, so they thought, they miscalculated everything. Because again, I hate to repeat myself now, but we are at the point, I suppose, where there's going to be some repetitive language in this podcast. If you think there's a chance that Urban might not say yes, you have to do a better job of protecting your own ass. And Texas acted like they were at war and they're just walking through the battlefield pretending like, well, I'm not going to get shot. I believe I won't get shot. I mean, you have to be protective. You have to cover your backside. And they didn't. They didn't in incredibly public fashion. I mean, Chris Del Conte still has not said a word about his football program on the record in 5 months. I mean, I don't know that he's said a public word since the Eyes of Texas thing first started. He has gone into hiding. And then at one point he put out his newsletter and apologized and said that part of the reason why he hadn't been, and I can't even remember when the hell this was. Maybe this was like October, maybe after the Oklahoma game. I've lost track of how all of this.
I feel like it was sometime after OU when we were, you and I think were the people calling him out at the most.
And he came out with a newsletter that Thursday after Oklahoma, right? And in it, he was like, hey, sorry, I haven't been visible with you guys. He referenced his wife, and I think she's dealing with vertigo. And he was like, I've been dealing with like family stuff. My wife's been sick, and I apologize for not being as public, not having these newsletters on the regular like I usually do. But after that, he still hasn't done anything. Like, he came out and was like, my bad. Like, I know you guys haven't seen much of me, but I've just been dealing with some stuff. And I think, you know, I remember when he said that, it was like, wow, man, you can't really go in on him like that now, because he's positioned himself as, well, you guys haven't heard from me because I had a family situation that I was dealing with. But he hasn't done anything in the 2 months since then. I mean, Tom Herman has just been, Tom Herman's been like a fish out of water, just flopping around, and nobody's been around to help him. And then Tom got himself back in the water this weekend. He flopped around, flopped into Manhattan. They scored 69 points. He gets back into the water, and everybody's like, yeah, no, we were all about Tom being in the water in the first place. But he's been flopping. They were standing by. They could have helped. And it's I'm fascinated to see where Tom Herman goes with this.
Because here's my question for you, Ketch. This is my question. This is what I want to interject here. And listen, let's just be honest. You have been critical of Tom over the past few years, okay? Yes. And let's not act like you are a Tom Herman supporter, backer. You guys are boys, like anything like that. Like,
I think he hates me.
Yeah. Okay. So that's fair, right? Okay. Is there any part of you, not from a coaching standpoint, let's remove Tom Herman as a coach, a Tom Herman as a person, is there any part of you that feels any kind of sympathy, any kind of like, damn, that's kind of screwed up? Because there's a part of me that almost feels like, saying set up to fail seems extreme, because that implies a certain amount of malice.
Yeah.
Where you feel like, okay, someone's intentionally setting up to fail, but I'm trying to figure out how he succeeds, because recruiting is already tough for him for 2021. 2022 has already been impacted by what happens this year. he's already has now there's a fan base that is like indifferent towards this dislike of him. Not look, I know this fan base enough where there's going to be a lot of indifference, but they'll get a little bit, they'll get the jonesing back in spring football a little bit, right? And they'll get the practice reports. And by training, catch, as long as I've been here, anytime we suggest that this team is going to win less than 10 games in our preseason predictions, people think we're idiots, right? I mean, every time. Now, this year is the exception, but you said 7-3 this year.
I got raked over the coals for that.
I said 8-2.
And you got raked over the coals for that.
I got abused. I got abused. And then you came that evening and said 7-3. And I was like, well, thank God. thank God you took some pressure off of me. And this team's going to finish 7-3. Now, no one's going to bump that thread. And no one's going to say catch is right. And you can't, because then they'll say you're arrogant or whatever. But I'm just so the two things from a human standpoint, is there any part of you that feels for a guy that I laid it out that you guys ain't boys? And the secondly is can he succeed now? If he stays, what's the possibility of him even succeeding next year because of all the things that have happened and all the things that have been thrown at him?
I'm glad you asked that question in the way that you asked it, because I think I've touched on this a little bit before, but I want to like full transparency here about my thoughts on Tom Herman, because I think this is a critical part of the discussion and the way that we've reported and consistently relayed our own personal messaging. I actually have a lot of empathy for Tom Herman as a human being. And I think one of the things that I feel like you and I and Orange Bloods in general did, and I know everybody thinks they did the best job, but in reporting what happened in the Eyes of Texas situation, I think sides were chosen all over this market. And to me, I think people have been exposed. And I think if you really just pay attention, you now know where a lot of the information is coming from your various University of Texas media sourcing. I found it wildly ironic. I'm going to give you an example, a specific example in just a second. I think Tom Herman's been a failure as a football coach. However, that truth has not meant that I felt it was okay to slander the man. So we've seen for the last 3 years, I ain't seen anything about red flags with Tom. Remember when I reported red flags with Tom in the way back in the beginning, and there was like some, oh, you can't do that. And I was like, well, it's there. I report what is the apparent truth, and there is a concern. But the last few years, and nobody had a concern with that. And you know what? We can be quite honest about it now. Like, the red flag was that Tom, as a younger dude, just liked to have a good time. He was a little bit of a hellraiser back in the day. And look, all that stuff that's come out with him about Zach Smith when they were assistants at Ohio State. Tom was a little bit of a hellraiser, and I'm okay saying that because I was one too. There ain't nothing Tom did that I probably hadn't done either. So I'm not throwing a stone from a glass house. His rep was that he liked to go out and get a little crunk and, you know, might go to the Houston rodeo and have too good of a time. And the concern was, well, as a Texas football coach, you're such a public person. You do that at U of H, you don't get put on TMZ. But you go out and have a good time at the Austin rodeo and too good of a time. That at Texas, you'll catch heat for that. Tom hadn't had any problems. I would say, as far as I can tell, Tom Herman has massively matured, and he still had his moments flipping off the camera. Like, you know, I mean, there are times I'm an asshole and make up mistakes too, but I like to think that I am evolving and maturing along the way. I still make mistakes. So does Tom. But by and large, Tom's failures aren't anything related to anything off the field. His failures are not winning enough games. Because if you think Tom Herman's arrogant, I would just tell you, you wouldn't. Urban Meyer's arrogant. Nick Saban's arrogant. There are very few people who are elite in their craft that don't have very high opinions of themselves. That's part of the gig. It's almost, there are very few ways to be great in those positions without immense amounts of self-confidence. So I feel like as a human being, Tom Herman's done his part. On top of that, I respect the hell out of two really specific things. I respect the hell out of the fact that Tom Herman broke the coaching code and helped an abused woman. Point blank. You can question his motivations. You can do whatever you want to. At the end of the day, Tom Herman saw a woman that was being abused by his friend, by his boy, and he chose right from wrong. And that's not easy to do. It's not. And we can all say it is. It's not. Because I have known a bunch of dudes over the years that have beaten their women, but I've known guys that have cheated on their women. That's not nearly as bad, but I can't say that I've done the right thing. I can't say that I pulled them aside and said, you know what? I'm choosing your wife over you. You shouldn't be doing this. There are hard calls to make, and on an extremely hard one, he was on the right side of history and helping a woman that if he and his wife hadn't personally helped, I don't know for sure that Courtney Smith is alive today. I don't. That's how little I think of Zach Smith. And then this summer, we saw a lot of coaches straddle the fence with regards to supporting their black players with the type of support that, quite frankly, those players need. Every black football player playing in major college football today needs to feel some support from their constituency regarding really important things in their life. It can't be just shut up and play ball. There's too much going on in the world. There's too much angst. There's too much hostility. And Tom Herman supported his players and did so in a way where he traded his own political capital in doing so. It's not an easy thing to do. It's not an easy thing to do to say, I'm going to stand by my players and go through them with this, knowing I'm going to piss off a bunch of people in what has traditionally been a very conservative fan base. It's Texas. He don't coach in Oregon. He coaches in Texas. And I think Tom Herman deserves a lot of credit for those things. And I wrote about that in my column this weekend. I feel empathy for Tom Herman as a human being, because as a human being, and you've actually said this to me off the record a couple of times, which is, you know, you and Tom are more alike than you guys probably realize. Like, you know, you once pointed out that our backgrounds are somewhat similar in terms of single moms and all that kind of stuff. And that our backgrounds are similar. Because he and I don't really get along. And, you know, and I get it. I totally get where he's coming from, but I also feel like I have to do my job. I have to evaluate his football success or lack of it, because that's what I'm paid to do. And I view him as a failure on the football side of things, but I refute and I reject some of the slander related to the support of his players, related to the Courtney Smith stuff, this drinking thing, these rumors that have popped up all season that only have popped up because Texas has been wanting to move on. And I've heard it from my sources where they've been like, what do you know about this, this drinking thing? And I've said, I haven't heard anything of it, actually. As far as I know, he's cool as the other side of the pillow. Like, his issues are he's not winning enough games. But what was interesting is, when the reporting on the Eyes of Texas stuff happened, it was weirdly positioned as I got accused for saying, I kind of respect the fact, for pointing out the truth, that it wasn't just him, that Chris Del Conte, and not just Del Conte, I would say Hartzell and all of the Texas administration, that collectively they bungled this. And I won't say any names, but I had some pretty dickless wonders from some other websites who were trolling me in my Twitter mentions, who were throwing, like, there's this Turtle Tom nickname that popped up. I hate it. I hate it. And because I think it's low rent. Like, I just didn't like it. And somebody called me out for it. And I was like, Turtle Tom, you guys think I'm carrying water for, and I put like Turtle Tom in parentheses because, I'd never heard that before. I don't read their stuff. I don't frequent their message boards. And I was like thinking to myself, grow up. First of all, Turtle Tom, like, what are we, 9? It sounds like something my 6-year-old daughter would come up with. He kind of looks like a turtle. I don't know. But they would come in there and they'd be like, oh, you're carrying weight for Herman. Why am I carrying? I, the guy who constantly says Tom Herman is failing at his job. Like, if I'm carrying the water, whew, I mean, who needs enemies if you got friends like that? But the issue is, their own biases couldn't see through even handedness. There are too many people in this market that view, to me, covering the Texas football team in extremes. And never before have we seen more of it than in the coverage of the football team this season. Because to me, there's a nuanced conversation here. To me, you and I could do hours of podcasting where we're talking about the nuance and complications of the Eyes of Texas thing and what his black players were, which is a different world than his white players. Sam Ellinger doesn't feel the world the way that DeMarvion Overshown does. Different life experiences, different worlds, different, just everything. And Tom Herman, like, stood up and supported that. And I think his players towards the end of the season, even as they lost, they clearly, they play for him. They do. I mean,
we've seen what it looks like when guys give up.
Man, I thought they would lose to Kansas State this weekend, which feels like the most ridiculous thing that I've ever said, given how that game played out. But I really felt like, how in the hell are they going to want to play this weekend? They got 3 of their better players bailing out, 2 of their captains. It's an early game. It's cold. They're traveling. They really ain't got nothing to play for because they're coming off of a horrible loss. And that's how the Kansas game happened, right? They went up to Kansas, just weren't in it, and against a bad football team, didn't play well enough to survive. And I thought, and we all 5 of us at Orange Bloods, we all had close games. I don't know what the largest margin of predicted victory was, but I don't think it was more than 3 or 4 points. We all thought it was going to be a close game for all of those reasons. They came out and played for their coach, and they came out and played for what they had to think was a lame duck coach. He ain't even going to be our coach next year. So why should we play hard? They came out and played hard for him, and I think that speaks volumes about what they will and won't do for Tom Herman and what he has earned from the dudes in that locker room. They play hard for him. And I just, I think it's very important in this moment in time that everybody stop and look back now at the last couple of months and ask yourself, what the hell really happened? Because I am convinced that the athletic department, who is the sourcing for some of our competitors, went out of their way to frame this as it was Tom's fault and Tom's fault alone. And today, those people that have been pushing that narrative, to me, have been pushed into a corner because Tom's coming back potentially. And I'm fascinated to see where Chris Del Conte goes with this and how the athletic department treats it, because they can say whatever they want to. Everybody knows that for the last couple of months, it is not strong wording to say they left Tom Herman hanging out to dry. That is not hyperbole. Not only did they leave him hanging out to dry, you can make a case they tried to sabotage him. Because I would argue that not publicly supporting your coach and setting it up so that other coaches, like, look, to this day, Tom Herman has not sold out Chris Del Conte. And to this day, Chris Del Conte has never answered a single question about anything that happened with the eyes of Texas. We know they had the meeting before the TCU game. We know that happened. And we know that there was conversations in the team meeting after the Oklahoma game. But Chris Del Conte has never answered a question about anything that happened before that meeting that happened a couple of days before the TCU game, which, oh, by the way, was a month into the season, which, oh, by the way, was several months after he met with players in July. He's never answered questions about how he and the athletic department managed that fiasco ever. Instead, it all got pinned on Tom. And people in this industry carried their water. And even though it doesn't pass the smell test, said, it's all Tom. Tom broke a directive and everything started from there, as if all of the weeks and months before that just never existed. As if the starting point with the eyes of Texas thing was after the TCU game. As if that will, and all we've heard is, well, Del Conte was clear in his messaging from the very beginning. Really? Cool. Answer some questions, if you don't mind, about how clear you were. Because if you had been crystal clear about the eyes of Texas from the very beginning with all of your coaches, then why did you need to have a meeting in October after the TCU game? Because with all of your coaches, because presumably you'd been crystal clear with everybody. And I guess the only one that wasn't, why wouldn't you just have a meeting with Herman? Why would you need to meet with everybody? If you were crystal clear and nobody, and it's a few good men here. I'm definitely doing my Jack Nicholson thing here, but if you were crystal clear about giving orders, then why was a meeting needed after the TCU game? Why weren't there questions? Remember when the season opener occurred and like they couldn't figure out when to play this? It was just mass confusion. I mean, If you were crystal clear, why wasn't it clear the first week of the season? If you were crystal clear, like, because why didn't Tom come out and say, well, you know what? Like, we've already talked and the expectation is that everybody's supposed to stand and they just got the plan of the song wrong. But like, we all know we're going to stand. We're all going to support. Like, that didn't happen. And then in the week after that happened, all there was, somebody pushed a button and it was confusing and whatever, but it didn't get fixed. Didn't get fixed. And they went to Lubbock and they played a game, but there wasn't any band there. So that game kind of happened and under the radar, and then the TCU game happens and they're back at home and they lose that game. And the lack of clarity caused that thing to happen. Now, did Tom ignore what was told to him after the TCU game? Again, there's some real conversation, I think, in real time back then that needed to happen. And if he did, I think you need to come out and protect your coach and say, well, yeah, I did tell Tom that, but I told him late in the week. They had that meeting on a Thursday. Tom was going to Dallas to play. The people forget he had to win that game. They had to win that game. Because I remember us talking about it, and there was concerns that, like, the eyes of Texas thing, if they pushed too hard on it, Would players opt out of playing in that game as a protest? It sounds crazy now because that didn't happen. But in real time, there was discussion about, like, well, you know, if he goes and tells them dudes 2 days before the game that they have to stand. What the hell happens? Like, the climate at that point suggested that could be very problematic. You know, there needed to be some room for nuance to say, you know, this is hard. And yes, all of this happened, but this is a work in progress. And at the end of the day, all they needed to say is, we're trying. We're all trying together. And we've probably made some mistakes. But at the end of the day, Tom Herman's my friend. And he's my football coach. And we're in the middle of the season and he needs our support. So The only thing you're going to hear from me all season long on this matter is, if you got a question about the eyes of Texas, come talk to me. I'm the athletic director. And as far as Tom Herman is concerned, he has 100% support from this office, because at the end of the day, he's supporting his players. And none of that happened. And that we live in this world where people were so quick to want to get angry at somebody that they took the Tom Herman's the only person to blame to heart. And, you know, the thing is, on war, that would have worked if they had hired Urban. They hire Urban, I don't think Chris Del Conte ever has to account for it. To be fair, maybe that might even be fair, right? Like, dude, you hire Urban, you can wear whatever color suit you want to. You can George Jefferson it all over the state for the rest of your life. But now that he's missed, now I think a lot of people are like, well, he did throw his coach under the bus. Like,
and Tom did for his players what no one was willing to do for him, which was take bullets.
Yeah.
That he did what should have been done for him, which was, he was willing to say, all right. Everybody's mad at these players, so you know what? I'll take the bullets. And even when he knew things had been, you know, communicated in one way and he was taking all the blame, he didn't say, oh, listen, man, listen, no, this happened in this meeting and this what was said. And this, no, he took the bullets. And that's what should have happened for him. No one was willing to take a bullet for him. No one was willing to stand up for him. No one was willing to say, hey, listen, I got their back. No one. And it's a fascinating thing, because when we look at the angst and the anger that's directed to him over the eyes, can we just put it on the table and just be as honest and transparent as possible? Because I understand that conversations of race have, you know, these kind of, I understand that things, the subject of race gets a little uncomfortable at times. And I understand that it's tough, right? But I think if you take a step back just objectively for a moment and say, okay, Tom Herman was a white guy, older guy, in a room full of young Black players who were going through a summer of a lot of seeing a lot of different things in the world that they just probably had never seen or had time to sit there and focus on. And he was in a really, really, really tough position. Like, tough. Like, you've got to think about where the position that he was in before you bang on the table and say he screwed everything up. He was in a situation where if he tells these guys, do it or else, he has potentially a revolt on his hands. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's tough. But then he has a fan base that's like, you need to do something. And so Tom Herman's like, okay, at the end of the day, what I've got to do is I got to figure out how to manage my team. And I got to let the administrations handle that thing. And so he, at the end of the day, he became the fall guy, as the guy that he did it wrong. Everybody else is doing it right. And he's the fall guy. And you know what he did? It is Tom. You know what he did? He manned up. Catch, you look. I wish you had a movie reference for this, but for your mob movies and mafia movies, that's what you want, right? You don't want the guy who's squealing, right? What they always go, what about Jimmy? He's a good guy. He won't talk, right? I mean, that's what he did. He was like, I won't talk. I won't say anything. And I'll go ahead and I'll serve this sentence for the sake of my team, for the sake of the guys, even though there was some things being that are not true in this situation. So it won't may not change the overall opinion of Tom. But I think if you look at him outside of a football coach and you look at just as a human being, I think about the situation that he was placed in. I think about being all alone on an island and him thinking like, man, I've got 100 guys in this locker room and they weren't going rogue. There was a lot of miscommunication. But even then he just said, all right, I've got a ride for my guys. And really, after that OU thing happened, catch, they won 3 straight games. I mean, yeah. from the time that everyone was against him and they were like, screw this guy, F him. They won three straight. They've won what, three out of four, if I'm correct?
Yeah.
Since that point. So clearly it resonates for all the people like Tom or this and that, and you know, the early can't stand him and guys are opting out. The thing about locker rooms is they don't lie. And you can see when a coach has a locker room and he doesn't or doesn't, right? I mean, and he still has a locker room, and there's something to be said for that. And he still has guys that believe in him, and there's something to be said for that. At the end of the day, he made, you know, a business decision, right, wrong, or indifferent. I think if we step back and say, look, man, it wasn't the easy decision to make, but he did it. But he was at least willing to take the blame. He was at least willing to be the bad guy. He's at least willing to be the person that almost lost his job and still could, because he was standing up for his players and trying to be, you know, I won't say on their side, but at least was trying to stand up, you know, for them and what was being communicated to them about the whole situation. There's a human element side of Tom Herman that I think I will always respect long after he's gone, because there's a lot of different ways he could have handled it. There's a lot of easy. We know the easy way that he could have handled it. He didn't choose that. And he stood up. He's a man of principle for that. I will respect him, whether he's here for another 2 months, 3 years. Well, if he's 3 years and things went well.
Yeah. there's a conference championship. How about this?
Even after he's gone from Texas, let me rephrase it. Even after he's gone from Texas, now, no matter how long it'll be, I'll still respect him for what he tried to do, what he tried to accomplish.
No, I'm with you, man. Like, as a human being, this all started 20 minutes ago when you were like, as a human being, do you have empathy for Tom? And I do. I don't on the football side of things. And because like, it's a bottom line business. Like, it's just, that's the way it is. And the bar is really high, and maybe the bar is too high. Maybe what we're learning is that the expectations at Texas based on the results are just out of whack, that, you know, maybe they need to be a little bit more, I don't know, I don't want to say it without insulting people, but considering how bad they've been for the last 10 years, it feels like beggars can't completely be choosy, right? It's like, oh man, you've been out in the desert for a year. You hadn't had a meal. And then you're judging like the taste of the crackers. What is this? This ain't a Ritz. I don't eat crackers unless they're Ritzes. You know, it feels like, at the end of the day, for Tom Herman, if this was it, I felt like, well, look, man, Tom will be able to walk out of here with his head high. That's how I felt. That because they finished the season potentially 6-3, 7-3, it wasn't a disaster. You know, for incredibly high expectations, disaster. But compared to like the last 10 years, it ain't a disaster. But more than that, again, on as a human being, I think he still gets it wrong. I mean, I get it wrong. It's okay to occasionally get it wrong. What matters most is like when you get it wrong to get it right. And I think Tom Herman has done a good job of navigating some really choppy waters. His heart's been in the right place, and I can live with that. I can live with a guy that makes mistakes, but he's trying to do the right thing. And I can say he's a good man, and it didn't work out as a football coach. That's where I am with Tom Herman. I feel like through 4 years, it hasn't worked out from the football side of things exactly the way he himself would tell you it does need to work out. When we asked him in May on our Orange Bloods live show with him, like the expectations, I gave him an opportunity to say Big 12 championship, major bowl game or bust in terms of yearly expectations are too high. And he didn't run from that. And in not running from that, he hasn't reached the expectations that he admitted are the ones that are fair. But I don't have anything negative to say about him as a human being. He's not perfect, but I think his heart seems, because I don't know Tom real well, so I have to be careful about how I say he is as a human being, because I'm really just talking about my perception of him as a human being. He and I don't really know each other. It might be that he wouldn't piss on me if I was on fire, but who knows? Like, maybe in another world where we're not, like, maybe we would like each other. I don't know. Like, the world that we're in, though, I don't think that relationship exists, but I don't want to have anything bad to say about him really as a human being. Because just to reiterate that point one last time, because from my perspective, I've seen a guy who more times than not trying to do the right thing with Courtney Smith, trying to do the right thing with his players. I think if there's anything wrong with Tom Herman is that it's taken him probably until this year to realize I can't make everybody happy. And I think I think I've learned that in the last year too. Ironically, he and I, through this Eyes of Texas situation, have realized more than ever before, some people just can't be won over. And no matter how much you think you're using reason, some people ain't about that. Some people don't see the world through the same filters as I would or as Tom would. But my perspective of Tom, good dude. And people can say otherwise, but I just don't feel like the facts warrant that. I don't feel like you can point to what he tried to do. It's real easy to be like, he should have done this, and he should have told those players that they're going to stand up or lose their scholarship. And it's like, do you know how you sound? Do you know how you sound? And how do you think that plays in the living room of Kamar Wheaton, right? I mean, I'm arbitrarily picking a prospect who is black, but it's the race thing's the elephant in the room. And I'll say this about Tom. If he leaves after this season, if they later fire him, when Tom Herman goes into his next job, he'll be able to go into the living room of the next Kamar Wheaton and say, just so you know, I will have your back no matter what. And if you needed an example of that, I risked my career at Texas to have my players back. That will resonate.
Oh, beyond. And an absolute are the two things I'll say. Now, I want to go to one thing because I'm kind of curious. Because you started talking about the expectations, right, here at Texas, okay? And what the reality really, really is, right? There's... You know, the LHN could be such a, good and a bad thing, because the LHN only shows wins, right? And LHN will have you thinking these things are still occurring, but it's not really the case. We know it's been since 2009, since the last championship. We know that for all of Matt Brown's glory, Matt Brown wasn't bringing home a bunch of Big 12 championships, Catch.
Yeah,
that wasn't what he was doing. We're talking. There were some great years. Don't get me wrong, but the reality is, it's been a good program, but it hasn't been great. Okay, and so as relates to Tom Herman, I'm curious for the next person that comes in, because Urban Meyer, you probably get a long runway. What becomes the appeal when people talk about Dan Mullen will come? They can get Dan Mullen. They can get some of these other guys. Coach, what's the appeal when realistically the fan base is only going to give you maybe 2 years? Like two years to turn around 20, you know, or whatever the number has been, or 2 years to make this into something that it hasn't been in the longest period of time, right? If you get, you know, and again, you can't take away the national championship season or the runner-up season in 2009. But what becomes the appeal when it's like, okay, come here, you get about one season, everyone's going to be give you that. Second season, if they don't see it, they're going to start thinking about the next one, the pressure that's associated with taking the job, the expectations of turning around. Like, how does this become an appealing, attractive place? Because I think everyone, as a Texas fan, Catch, believes that It's Texas. Like with Urban, it's Texas. Of course he's going to coach here. But it's Texas. Why wouldn't he? And I think that's the belief. The belief is, yeah, you know what? If we want to go get John Harbaugh, we probably can. I mean, we're Texas. Like, why would he turn us down? You know, you see that T on our tent. You know, I mean, it's UT, right? But the reality is, it has a prestigious job, and it comes with a whole lot of pressure that might be somewhat unrealistic. How does you if they part ways with UT? How do they find someone that's willing to take this on? Because outside of the money, because that's what it's been like. Okay, you're going to give me that much money. Of course, I'm going to take it. But is it an appealing job?
Well, it is in the sense that Urban Meyer gave it some consideration. So there aren't many jobs that I think Urban Meyer would go on to national television in limbo with. But look, your points are fair. I mean, I think the money, Austin, and the recruiting territory that's available makes it unique to most jobs. I mean, not even the Alabama job completely has that. Now, look, Alabama's got a lot of things going for it, but, you know, I mean, if you were going to, all things being equal, I bet Nick Saban, well, maybe not. Maybe Nick Saban prefers Tuscaloosa over Austin. But generally speaking, Austin's considered to be a more appealing place to live than most places around the country. It's a very popular city. Now, that has its downside and its upsides, and who knows, maybe a guy like Mike Gundy prefers a little bit more of a rural setting. Not everybody would dig big city vibes from Austin. But, you know, the money's the money. The recruiting is what's so different about Texas than, you know, people keep comparing in the last 24 hours Texas to Nebraska. But the difference between Nebraska and Texas, even if there's a billion similarities in terms of the way they have they have faded from national relevance lately. But Nebraska has no recruiting terrain. You know, the state of Nebraska as a whole probably produces a half dozen major college football prospects each year. So it's difficult. They don't have a home base. Texas has that, and that will always make this job really appealing. The difference, though, in 2020 from 10 years ago or 20 years ago is that college football has evolved into a world where you don't necessarily have to be at Texas to win in Texas. So we've seen Baylor get good, and Baylor can pay a lot of money. And we've seen now Texas A&M start to play good football, and they're paying their coach a lot of money. And you could compare contrast these locations. And I think Texas looks good in a lot of estimations, but there are other places that you can live. There are other places where you can recruit, and there are other places where you can make a lot of money. And I think every place has 9 Jerry Joneses around if you're going to lose for 10 years. I mean, we didn't hear a whole lot about the Jerry Joneses inside the Texas athletic department when Mack Brown had it rolling. Rich dudes shut the hell up and enjoy the wins and try to play golf with their coach when the program's good. When the program's bad, they get involved. They get, you know, boisterous. And I think that's the case anywhere. I did a radio show in Florida earlier today. And I was like, look, man, if the Florida football program hadn't won more than 9 games in a decade and half of those seasons were losing seasons, and, you know, and suddenly it just felt like your peak was way beyond, like so far in the past you could barely remember it. I was like, there'd be 9 Jerry Joneses trying to make shit happen for the University of Florida football program. Same with Alabama, same with Notre Dame, same with Ohio State. I think some of these programs just haven't been irrelevant. Texas is one of the real big name brand power programs. One of the only ones that just can't get right. That needs to be the new nickname for Texas. Can't get right. That is you want a movie reference? That's Texas, right? That is their movie character. And I don't know that there's anybody else around the country right now that's can't get right quite like Texas is. And it's led to a lot of people nationally talking about Texas in as a joke, as a punchline. But I would just maintain that what we're seeing at Texas is should be expected. It should be. Because if Tom Herman had won a Big 12 championship last year and they were competing for a Big 12 championship this year, none of this is happening. And Chris Del Conte would have protected Tom Herman. If they had a championship coach, even if Chris Del Conte was pissed at Tom Herman, you can't hang out that guy. Tom Herman could go get a job somewhere. It's hard finding championship football coaches. So when you're a championship football coach, you can do all kinds of asinine shit. But when you're not a championship coach, everything falls under a different category. And the only thing that Tom Herman's done wrong for me, he hadn't won enough games for people to give him benefit of the doubt. You get benefit of the doubt in this world as a major college football coach by winning championships, for annually competing for championships. That hasn't happened. That's the bar. And when you don't do that, all this other stuff comes up in ways that it just wouldn't otherwise. This Eyes of Texas thing is not, we talked about it. If Texas was undefeated, if Texas was 4-0, people have lost, if Texas was 4-0 and ranked in the top five, people would have been pissed about that Eyes of Texas thing. They wouldn't have been as pissed as they were when they were 2-2. Winning both cures everything and ruins everything. And Texas is in the state of ruin because they aren't winning enough. And this place will never get better until that happens. It will always be perceived as the program that's got a bunch of cooks in the kitchen. But of course they do. Of course they do. Like, this is a billion-dollar business, and they're floundering. And the people that make it a billion-dollar business that donate their millions, they want some return on their investment. To me, it's just like, this is the obvious. And I think it's comical when people try to throw Texas under the bus like it's some sort of extreme situation. It's only extreme because they're the only ones in it. Like, is there anybody else you could compare to Texas right now? You can't say Nebraska. I mean, I don't see it. Like, it's just not the same thing. And as it relates to Tom, that's his sin. His sin is better than Charlie, not as good as Mac. That is not a horrible set of sins. But when you're paid what he's paid, the expectations are that to be great and not just very good. And I think Tom has been somewhere between good and at times, I mean, he did win the Sugar Bowl. There have been times when they've been very good. They did beat an incredible Oklahoma team. They're 1-4 against Oklahoma, but like they've been competitive. They have won that game. Like, you know, it hasn't always been terrible. This isn't Charlie Strong. This is somewhere between good and very good. And that's just not good enough.
So let me ask you this. I mean, because they're allowing him to coach, okay? And the more they allow him to coach also means the more they allow him to win, okay? So assuming hell doesn't, you know, assuming this game is this week, occurs this weekend, and all hell doesn't break loose in a way that you and I cannot predict as of this moment. And so let's just assume all is right with the world and Texas goes and they beat Kansas this weekend, okay? At 7-3. And then they say, all right, well, you know, because if there's no Urban, because there's still no immediacy to make a move, correct?
Yeah.
So let's just say, all right, well, we'll just allow him to coach in the bowl game. He's pretty damn good in bowl games. Now, he won't have the month to prepare that he's used to. Well, he only have a couple of weeks. I don't even know why we're playing a bowl game, but whatever.
they can't go out.
No. So, I mean, let's say in two, he turns it around and they win their bowl game. And he's 8-3. Catch. How do you fire a coach that potentially finishes 8-3? What would be the justification that's without cause?
In most situations, there's not. I mean, simple as that, I suppose. But, or you've got somebody lined up. It's just Texas. Ultimately, we got to wrap up this podcast. ultimately Texas, as much as Tom Herman has failed, whatever levels of failure you think Tom Herman as a football coach has racked up, I would contend the Texas athletic department's racked up more. And so what you have now, I guess my parting shot would be, you've got a program where there's failure across the board now. And that's problematic, because the hope would have been that Del Conte could save Texas from this. Somebody has to. There has to be somebody in this athletic department working at such a high level that it lifts all of the other boats. But what we really are seeing right now is that person doesn't exist. And maybe until it does, Texas football fans need to reevaluate what their expectations are. It has been revealed that Chris Del Conte has some limitations as an athletic director. I think the biggest one is, I think he's not very shrewd. I don't think Chris Del Conte plays the game very well. And I think that has been revealed now. I think people have been confirmation bias kicked in a way where when they looked at Chris Del Conte in the eyes of Texas situation, they wanted to believe that Tom Herman was the problem, because they'd already worked it in their head that Herman was a problem. They didn't want to believe that Del Conte could be part of the problem, because if that's the case, everybody's part of the problem. So what did they do? They put all their chips in on Chris Del Conte and believe this narrative that he did it. He did what he was supposed to do. Why? Well, Chris Del Conte doesn't make mistakes. Chris Del Conte is a lion as an athletic director. And maybe he's really just a kitty cat that can raise money with the best of them, but a kitty cat nonetheless. And I don't know what you do if you're Texas right now, the supporter. I'm not even talking about the athletic department now. I'm just talking about, I don't know what an Orange Blood subscriber thinks when they wake up this morning. And yesterday they thought they had some lions, and today they realize they don't. Any. Who is the lion in Texas athletics right now? I don't know. I don't see one. I see kitty cats.
Meow. Shaka. Hey, they only one loss for Shaka.
Shaka Smart. You know what? Shaka Smart probably tells all his boys, you see this Mickey Mouse bullshit now. Now you guys see. Now you guys see what I have to work with. And God loves Shaka. He hadn't had to really answer any of these questions about the eyes of Texas. But I'll just also say this. I don't think there's enough appreciation. Look, Shaka, with his eyes of Texas, they can go into his locker room and talk to these dudes, and they realize, you know, at the end of the day, Shaka is a black man, you know, with black players, and trying to navigate a set of waters that, you know, this situation wasn't made for Shaka Smart to truly have an opinion. And he ain't given one, because when Shaka Smart gives an opinion on things like this, it just makes people hate him even more. When he made that comment about Trump after the election, he was speaking up for his players. Didn't nobody want to hear that. Tell your players to sit down, shut up, and do their jobs, or take their scholarships away. I don't want to go completely back in on this, but I feel like I have to say it. Shame on everybody that hasn't had enough wherewithal to look at what Tom Herman has had to deal with on that front and not just acknowledged that's hella tricky. I mean, he's got 85 scholarship players, dozens and dozens of them are not white. And it's just more complicated. It's more complicated than any sport on campus for the sheer volume of players. And with this particular story, it would have been, I think, in some ways easier to have a black coach. There aren't many of them. Shame on you, college football. But it would have been easier, because I think the players, no matter what they would have been told, would have been able to look their coach and say, okay, you know, this some BS, but we can feel where you're coming from. It wouldn't have felt like Shaka telling his players they have to stand was somehow part of Shaka being a part of the very establishment that they're pushing back against. But Tom, because he's white, it's just tricky. It's just harder. And that in the last few months, since July, very few people have been willing to say, you know, to be fair, that's really tricky. Really tricky. I mean, I don't know how he does it. I don't know how anybody could pull off what Tom pulled off without, you know, Nick Saban didn't have to deal with this. Ain't no other coach in the country had to deal this season with the school song being alleged to be racist. This is kind of a one-off. I mean, we might not ever see anything quite like this again in the history of college football, and that people couldn't on war just say, that's complicated.
I mean, there's a panel being that was formed to research the song, and no one was willing to say, okay, well, listen, maybe the players don't have all the facts. You know what? There's going to be, you know, a panel that's coming out, like, it, you know, if they'll have a finding sometime, you know, in 2021 or whatever it's going to be, right? And so, hey, things were tough, but hell, there's a panel being formed to get to the bottom of this.
Yeah, it's complicated.
Like, yeah, it's a lot. There's a lot of little things. There's a lot of emotions. He was like, I don't know what to do. Where in Tom's training as a football coach was that in the manual?
On one hand, I can support my players and they will appreciate that. Or he was damned if he did and damned if he didn't in this situation in a way that is impossible to ignore. And it feels like almost everybody's ignored it. And I'm not saying you have to give him a pass. I'm not saying you have to like him. I'm not saying it has to impact the way you feel about how he's handled the football side of things. All I'm saying is it would be fair to be able to acknowledge that's tricky. I don't know if he got it right or wrong, mostly because it's tricky. And
trickier than it would be for the swim coach. Yes. Trickier than it might be for the softball coach, for the coaches who are at volleyball or football or basketball who are having to navigate tricky waters. It's like, oh, well, this is a little bit more difficult than the other sports that maybe not don't have as many people of color.
Did you hear from the golf coach? The golf coach said he told his players right away. He understood. Okay. All I'm saying is, again, that they as an organization couldn't support their coach by just saying this is really tricky and Tom's doing his best. And, you know, would we have done some things different? Maybe, but who the hell are we to second guess a situation that nobody in the history of the planet has ever had to deal with? That's true. That's true. Nobody on earth has ever quite had to deal with the exact situation that Tom Herman had to deal with this season. There's no playbook for it. Now, Tom can write a playbook. Tom now can write a playbook on, whew, if you ever find yourself as a head football coach at a major university in a situation where something that your fan base views as sacred comes under attack for potentially a history that has some racial elements to it, I can write a book on what can go wrong and what you might need to do and what mistakes you might make. It didn't exist before this year. And I find it so fucked up that so many people just can't say that part out loud. They just can't say, Tom ain't my guy as a coach, but I can't hold the size of Texas thing against him because it shit is not easy. It's one of them things like, okay, you guys want to try it on? Go in the locker room and tell all them dudes they got to stand. You know what? Chris Del Conte didn't want to do it. Chris Del Conte waited until after Oklahoma to go into a room with them players and lay down the law. It took that to happen. That ain't Tom Herman's fault. That is not Tom Herman's fault that his boss did not help him with that entire situation. So anyway, I'm done. I have said everything I need to say about You've Texas unloaded. Football for, you know, this has been a long podcast, but you know, there's a lot going on right now. There is so much on war to this story. I feel like we touched on a lot of it. At the end of the day, though, where we're left with is continued chaos.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, yeah, props to you. You unloaded, you unleashed, but you know what? It was worth it. And look, hey, this is Kansas week. There's nothing on Monday. There's nothing on Tuesday. You have enough time to digest this. Like, so that props to you if you've got to the end of this. But if you got to the end of this, it's because there's nothing else going on. So, yeah, this is something that was timely that has to be discussed. There's so many. We started talking at the beginning. There's lots of layers to it. It's not just as simple you didn't get Urban Meyer. There's a lot of things that went into this whole process for this year, last year, the past couple of years, you know, the feuds, the makeups, like all these type of things, the eyes, the losses, the Oklahomas, like there's a lot that a ground that had to be covered that if you listen to any other podcast and they don't get into it, well, they're just not giving you the real. They're just not giving you the real, and they're not keeping it 100 with you. They're keeping it in a PG matter that they don't want to rock any boats and ruffle any feathers. And again, some of these conversations are tough. They're kind of hard, but they needed to be had. And so I'm glad that we were able to have them. If you guys did me a favor, because we cover a lot of tough material, there's some things that you want to talk about as relates to Catch and I, and you just feel like in your heart of hearts, those guys, F those guys, contact us, hit us up. We'll have a personal conversation. If you don't make it into a war on the message boards or on Twitter and all these other type of things, like if you know, it's interesting, Catch. We always talk about trying to have conversations, right? Then when you hear a side of a conversation that maybe you just don't like, then it's like, well, I don't want to talk about it. And let's just throw somebody under the bus and let's say F that guy. Well, I'm offering. Let's have a conversation. But yes, Catch, overall, a really good podcast. I don't know if he's doing one after Kansas. And so, you know, we're definitely not going to talk to Tom again until after the Kansas game. I mean, he may not have another one that Monday. So maybe the last Overreaction Monday podcast. And if so, maybe we'll have to figure out some other rebranding.
The Monday Overreaction podcast continues.
Oh,
we're just going to talk about the NFL and stuff.
I think
this is now a new institution. Because you and I got to have weekly jam sessions. And once we get through the college football season, we still got stuff to overreact to. Mm. We could have spent an hour talking about the Jets Raiders game.
Yes.
Yeah.
Let's do Christmas and soon, because I want to overreact to my son's mom still telling my oldest son that Santa exists. Like, I would like to have an overreaction podcast on why you are choosing to lie to our son about Santa.
For Anwar Richardson and Jeff Ketchum, thank you for listening to the Monday Overreaction podcast. We will do this again next week. You guys take care of each other. Be good to each other. I know it's not easy. Oh, and wear your mask. Later.